The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Sid Lowe will be here to reflect on Spain's thrilling 0-0 draw against Portugal. Also, Craig Burley here to give us his thoughts with what's been going on with Manchester United over the last few days. We start, though, by welcoming to the programme Shaka Hislop, Stevie Nicol and Frank LeBeuf, who have all been excitedly watching these international friendlies unfold. I want to start with you, Frank, and talk about France's 7-1 victory over Ukraine. Let's start with a big talking point. Camavinga becoming the youngest scorer for France in over 100 years. What a lovely finish it was from the youngster.
Well, the little boy is amazing. I mean, and it wasn't perfect because he missed like 2-3 passes in the first half, you know, and you can always be criticizing him. But he's 17 years old. I mean, he's celebrating his second cap with France, and he scored a beautiful goal, launching an easy win for France. But seeing so many players like him, like Kylian Mbappe, like Haaland, being so mature, you know, and already playing for their national team and feeling good, easy, it's really amazing for me, because we all know the pressure that you have, the tension that you have when you join the national team, but they feel like home. So it feels like they know what's going to happen. It's like they already planned it, and they're absolutely perfect. I wish him a long, long time with the national team. And if he keeps on doing like that, playing like that, yeah, for sure he's going to be here for at least a decade.
At the other end of the spectrum, Frank, you had Olivier Giroud scoring 2 goals, becoming the second top all-time goal scorer, just behind Thierry Henry, taking over from Michel Platini. How is he regarded in France overall, Frank?
Not very well, I have to say. Very much criticised. He's been on the show yesterday. I don't know if it's Robbo or if it's Ali Moreno who would say that I don't understand why Giroud is still with the national team. And it's always been like that, you know. Every club that he played, every time that he played with the national team, why is he there? Well, he has 100 caps. He scored 42 goals, more than Platini, more than Zidane. By the way, Griezmann beat also Zidane, scoring more goals than him. But yeah, coming back to Giroud, the player is amazing. He never gives up, and that's what I like the most about him. You can say he's bad, but he scores, and he scores important goals. Yeah, today it's a friendly, but you know, he was the captain today. He scored 2 goals. He almost scored a third one just before going out. It does the job. You can say whatever you want. We saw that with Chelsea at the end of the season, last season. The guy is always there and will never give up.
Frank, you look at this French squad overall, and you just take a look at who came off the bench in the second half. Kylian Mbappe came on, Varane came on, Griezmann, Paul Pogba. It's just an embarrassment of riches for Deschamps, isn't it? It's incredible.
Yeah, as I said yesterday, now Didier Deschamps has the difficulty of the choice, but the prime of the rich. You have so many players that you could put in, so many tactics that you can think about, and it's going to be a problem for Didier to keep everybody spot on, you know, because some players are going to be on the bench and maybe big players. I mean, I wasn't pleased with Pogba today. He missed so many things during the 45 minutes that he played. Griezmann also needed like 20 minutes to start his game. So I don't know what's going to be the lineup next Sunday, but we're going to be, you know, ready for some surprises during those months, where the French were going to play a lot, but the young are pushing the less young already out, and it's going to be a big competition. But yeah, we can say that France is a favorite because of the talent that they have, but it's always the chemistry that you have to find, the atmosphere in the squad, and that we'll see. Coming closer to the Euro, we'll see if we have a chance.
Meanwhile, in Germany, it was a 3-3 draw against Turkey. Stevie, this was the game that you were focusing on. Not much happened in the first half, but second half, lots to talk about.
Yeah, that's exactly how it pretty much went about. You know, for 45 minutes, I was beginning to understand why they brought the Nations League in, because this was a friendly like old days, nothing happening, two reserve teams and just a bore fest. But after Draxler scored just before the whistle went for half time, things opened up and both sides started passing the ball. You know, Turkey were more playing counter-attacking than anything else, and the Germans were beginning to put passes together. So there was chances, there was goals, there was opportunities. I mean, there was mistakes as well, and the biggest one was from the referee. Turkey's equaliser to make it 2-2. Eihausen had miscontrolled the ball, yes, but Karakas ran straight into him, knocked him over, and that meant he was through on goal. So thank goodness for VAR generally, and clearly there was no VAR here. But again, the Germans took the lead three times, and as they've done in recent times, gave it all away, and they gave it all away right at the very end. So, in the end, I actually enjoyed it, but boy, it took 45 minutes to get warmed up.
Who stood out for you for the Germans? We saw Kai Havertz with a couple of assists, Stevie.
Do you know, it's weird. Yes, Havertz, some of the things he did were really delicate, really simple, but well executed. But then he would disappear for long periods. So he kind of played the way he does for Chelsea. You know, he's kind of nowhere, and then he'll have a lovely little touch, you know, just the perfect way, a nice little pass. He'll just do something that keeps you interested. So, yeah, I mean, listen to me. Officially, he had two assists, but the truth is he was in and out of the game instead of what you expect, a guy who's gone for so much money. He should be involved all the time.
Meanwhile, Shaka, Mexico with a 1-0 victory over the Dutch. Of course, Frank de Boer's first game in charge of the Netherlands side. And deja vu, because it was a dodgy penalty that would separate these two teams.
It was. Raul Jimenez upended by Nathan Ake for the penalty that saw the one goal in this game. And in truth, it came from a free kick. And I'm pretty sure Jimenez was offside from the free kick. But of course, no VAR, so the referee's decision stood. Jimenez took the penalty away. Not an awful lot to report in this game, other than this was Tata Martino up against Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer taking over from Ronald Koeman. And in all honesty, the better of the two teams won. Dodgy penalty and all. The Dutch offered nothing until the 88th minute. They tried to pass the ball out of the back more often than they should, got themselves in trouble. But even so, cruel, largely untested. Mexico didn't seem to have their shooting boots on, but they had the better of the game, and you could make the argument that the better of the two teams won, as you say, offside apart.
The issue here, obviously, Shaka, and arguably the big issue with regards to the fact it's only a friendly, Frank de Boer wants to start off with a win because he's under the microscope already, inevitably, as international coach. And you had Van der Beek, you had Van Dijk, you know, you had Memphis Depay, you had a proper team out there today, but clearly he's got a lot of work to do, and there are questions maybe already about whether or not he's the man to do it.
Yeah, without question, yeah. He has a lot of work to do with this Dutch team, but then this is a Dutch team that got to the Nations League final not so long ago under Ronald Koeman, so you wonder if it's him having a lot of work to do or if this team has already started to regress under Frank de Boer. And as much as I make this about Tata Martino and Frank de Boer, at times you saw that attacking side to Mexico, which you would expect from Tata Martino. But at no point in the first 88 minutes of this game did Talavera seem all that troubled. I remember him coming for a cross that had him stretched, but then the linesman's flag went up. For the first 88 minutes, that's the highlight. As far as the Dutch were concerned, any other save he had to make was fairly routine, saying that similarly for Krul, but that was more poor Mexico finishing than anything. So you take a team that gets to the Nations League final and look this poor against a Mexico who will be competing in CONCACAF and comfortably so, and still trying to establish themselves on this bigger stage against top class European opposition. And report card isn't good so far after 90 minutes for Frank de Boer.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. More from Shaka, Frank and Stevie available on Extra Time, which you can check out over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Well, this is how the transfer window closed for Manchester United in the end. Mark Ogden writing on ESPN FC today suggesting that none of these were Solskjaer's initial targets. He was looking at Sancho, Grealish, Upamecano and Nathan Ake. Of course, none of them making the move to Old Trafford in the end. As we welcome Craig Burley to the show. Craig, do you feel sorry for Ollie at all?
No, I don't feel sorry for any manager that's working at the top of the tree, but he's got to work with what he's got. It's just been another shambolic window from a club, one of the biggest clubs in the world, that's still trying to play catch-up. Now, there was those who saw United's run to the Champions League and thought they were the Champions League third place in the league and thought they were the best thing since sliced bread. And now these people, having watched them start the season, realise that actually the squad still needs an overhaul. And once again, we've seen the hierarchy of this football club stumble around like, you know, drunks on a Friday night trying to sign players. And quite frankly, it's just not good enough. But I watched a bit of the show yesterday, Dan, and you're quite right. Or was it the day before, in suggesting to Danny Higginbottom and one or two others, they still should be better than what we've been seeing on the field with the players they've got. I mean, they've been outplayed in every league game this season. I mean, Crystal Palace, outplayed, humiliated. Brighton Hove Albion, by the way, that was one they got away with, outplayed. It was a bit of a humiliating performance. And that's before we even get to the Tottenham game. Before you can forget the Martial sending off, Tottenham are going to beat them on that day because Tottenham had their number. So they've been humiliated, really, in all three games. You would have thought that would have spurred Ed Woodward on to go and at least make some big signings. But no.
No, it didn't, obviously. And you compare it to Manchester City down the road. Obviously, vulnerable defensively, they make a big signing. They make a big statement. Manchester United, once again, as you say, stumbling around, trying to get deals done late on. But this is the hand they're dealt with now. This is what they've got. And the question, as we discussed, obviously, when Danny was on, is whether or not Solskjaer now can get this team galvanised and playing well and competitive.
Well, they should still be good enough to be in the top four.
Right.
I mean, they just should. Now, they're not going to challenge. We knew that anyway. But they're just not going to be good enough unless Manchester City and Liverpool reproduce consistently the kind of dross that we've seen from them over the last weekend or two, which has been a big surprise. I don't see it lasting, but it might. And that would be the only reason that United could get themselves in the mix. But they've got a problem in terms of the recruitment. They've got a problem in terms of the manager, who, by the way, sits on the side watching some sort of replays on iPad and does really nothing about it. I mean, the decision to play Paul Pogba and keep Paul Pogba on the field, by the way, when they were down to 10 men, but play him on the left-hand side in a position where one of the laziest players in your squad has going to have to track back more often than most because he's playing in the wide position, was just incredible. So here we have a playing squad that's disjointed at the moment. We've got a centre-half, we can't even call it a pairing because we don't know who the pairings are, and their best centre-half, Harry Maguire, has his head up his backside at the moment. And we've got a manager who, quite frankly, I don't think is up to the task. So, and they need a league win very, very soon. They need to put a run together, and that, Dan, for me, looks unlikely.
Just going back to that result at the weekend, how did it go so badly so quickly?
Ill-disciplined, arrogant, don't want to do the dirty side of the game first, i.e., you know, really press yourself on the opposing team at home, put your foot on them, throttle them, work harder than them, then play your stuff. But they didn't. They were outpaced and they're making bad decisions. You know, Maguire and Bailly, the decision-making was just horrendous. And Tottenham were good. Tottenham were excellent. And Højbjerg did a great job of reading the game. He gives them much more aggression than Harry Winks in there. And actually, he wasn't an exciting signing, but he might be a decent one for them. And they got the very most out of their squad in that game, started the season pretty well, and United didn't. And then once they went down to 10 men, they were all over the parish, absolutely all over the parish. And I mentioned he's leaving players on in positions where they're going to get exposed. So the decision-making all around for United has just been really, really poor.
You obviously have been quite vocal about Solskjaer and how he's not the right man for the job. How far down the road are we for others, i.e. the Manchester United board, realising this and coming to the same conclusion?
Oh, I think deep down they know. I think deep down they know that he's not going to be the man to lead this club. And it's a juggernaut of a ship, and it needs guidance all around. And I've nothing against Solskjaer. He seems, I played against him. He's similar age to me. He seems a thoroughly honest, decent guy. But we're not judging individuals' personality here. We're judging the ability to try and claw back a massive gap, both domestically and in Europe. And that just doesn't come from management, but management is a huge part of it. So I think the United board already know, but you know, I think they would be embarrassed and ashamed into making an early decision. But listen, results at some point in the next 2 or 3 months might force their hand.
Craig, you mentioned Spurs, obviously. It took two to tango. They were excellent. Old Trafford took their chances brilliantly. Have we underestimated them a little bit?
Well, I hope so, because I don't want to see... I think it would be nice to have a positive run of conversations about Jose Mourinho, because it just seems that we stick the knife and hit him over the head with a hammer every time we're on. But listen, that's up to them to prove us wrong. I heard Xhaka on the show saying he's changed his mind about them. I think it would take a little bit of time. You know, they beat a hapless United and it was an excellent performance. But, you know, one swallow doesn't make a summer. So I think they've made some good signings. I mentioned Højbjerg and his work rate in there. I suppose keeping Harry Kane in the transfer window has been a great bit of business as well. Bringing in the left-back. And Dombele looks a much happier player and played a lot better. That would be a big, almost like signing a new player, isn't he? Because for 12 months, he was on the missing list. And of course, Gareth Bale, yet to come in and get any meaningful game time, could be a big player for them. So, yeah, I think things are looking a little rosier in the Tottenham garden right now.
Before I let you go, Craig, I want to talk to you about what happened with the defending champions losing 7-2 against Aston Villa. How on earth do you explain this?
Arrogance.
Really?
Yeah, I think we'll see. And listen, I think Klopp's going to have to stamp down on it. Some people may disagree. But it's smacked to me. Because the performance, you remember, for those that remember, the first 45 minutes against Arsenal was exhilarating, right? But Arsenal were a challenge, somewhat. Here we have Liverpool going into the back garden of a club that avoided relegation by 1 point. And it smacked to me like a team that thought they could just pitch up there, swan around and take the 3 points. And they got a bloody nose. Because Villa did some good business in the window. Young Ollie Watkins from Brentford, who really is a good young player, just failed to make promotion with Brentford last season. Physical, quick, runs the channels, doesn't give you a minute. Ross Barkley coming in will run with the ball. Keeping Jack Grealish, we saw how good against Liverpool he was. So you can't take this for granted, Dan. And I felt they did. And it wasn't just, and I heard Stevie talking about this high line. And it is crazy, and I don't get it. We saw it against Leeds in the first game of the season. It almost bit them on the backside. It's almost like they've watched Bayern Munich and thought, that's going to work for us. But it's not a one-fit-all system in doing that. It's very high risk. And as Stevie rightly pointed out, they had two great seasons, one domestically and one in Europe the year before, playing a much better shape. So why take the chance and play in this stupidly high line when clubs will use midfield runners to run in behind you? But really, that's hiding the other side of the game to me. And I thought that was the arrogance, because look at Firmino's performance, giving the ball away. Look at the performance in the middle of the park. Look at Joe Gomez. Look at the fullbacks. And we saw a clip of Jordan Henderson on the bench, a guy that gets besmirched by a lot of people as a guy that, well, Liverpool can just leave him out. And he looked disgusted on the bench. That's the kind of player that they were missing. A guy in the middle of the park that maybe doesn't have the talent of others, but he's got a bit of grit and a bit of everything. And I thought Liverpool just lacked that. And I hope that was a wake-up call for them, that just because they're the league champions and they've had two great years, they can't just swan into the back garden of clubs in the bottom half of the league and think they're going to take the 3 points. And that, for me, at the weekend, smacked of just that.
So will this prove to be a wake-up call, or is it a sign of things to come?
No, I think they're too good to have not to be a wake-up call. I mean, Klopp was smirking on the sidelines at some of the goals, and I know there was at least three deflected goals, but that doesn't really gloss over what was a really, you know, below par, arrogant, poor performance. Even Van Dijk, I didn't see Van Dijk getting angry. I didn't see him getting angry. I didn't see him really leading that back four. I didn't hear it. I mean, we can hear with no crowd, we can hear the players more. But I didn't hear Liverpool being vocal. I was surprised at that. I was really surprised that when things were going against them, Virgil van Dijk said, sod this. I don't care what the manager wants. I'm going to show leadership on the field, and we're going to drop off a little bit, and we're going to have a better shape. I didn't see that. But I fully expect Jurgen Klopp to go through them like a dozy salts, or have gone through them like a dozy salts over the last couple of days, because that will be unacceptable to him. He shoulders some of the blame as well. But I think it was a good early season wake-up call. If it wasn't, might be a difficult season for them.
Go through them like a what?
Dose of salts.
What's that?
It's an expression my parents used to use. I've got no idea what it means.
Thank you.
I thought you might have heard of that. It was a bit like Villa going through Liverpool.
Craig Burley, thank you very much. Just a reminder, it may be international break, but we remain with you 7 days a week. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Elsewhere today, it finished goalless between Portugal and Spain. Portugal hit in the woodwork a couple of times. For Spain, we saw the debut of Adama Traoré. Sid Lowe is with us. Oh, Sid, nothing like a 0-0 international friendly to get the juices flowing.
Absolutely. What a brilliant and exciting way to start the show, eh?
What's big takeaways? For Spain, first time they haven't scored since what, 2016?
Yeah, and that's obviously worrying from Spain's point of view. I think as well they will look at it and think they weren't that close to scoring. And I thought they had a very good start to the game. The first 25 minutes or so, their use of the ball was very good. They looked like much the better side. They dominated possession. But it's true that the game kind of drifted away from them, particularly in the second half. And then, as you say, Portugal twice hit the bar, both times the ball coming down, once only just away from the line and the other bang on the line. Both times in real time, it looked like the ball might even have gone over the line. And then right at the very, very end is a very, very clear chance indeed for João Félix, who I still don't know how he didn't score. He was about a metre out when the ball arrived at him. He was diving into it, but couldn't get the finish. I think from Spain's point of view, the most positive thing will be that thing that you pointed out at the start, a debut for Adama Traore, and a sense that he gives them something different, which of course we knew in advance, but that he was prepared to do the things that have made him stand out so much for Wolves. You know, he was running at people, he was very, very direct, he delivered a couple of decent crosses, he had one shot which I must admit at first I thought it only just missed the post, but actually almost went out for a corner, by the corner flag. But having said that, it was at that kind of angle where that actually wasn't far off the post, and he just looked like a different element to the way that Spain play, and that could well be useful. There was a lovely moment when he bumped into Trincao, and Trincao went flying, and Trincao's on the floor, and Adama Traore turns around to the referee and points at his shoulder and says, look, it was just a shoulder charge. To which the referee kind of looks at Adama Traore and says, yeah, but your shoulder is about four times the size that his entire body is, so it's not surprising he went flying.
What are they going to do about the lack of number nine, Sid?
Well, Luis Enrique was asked about this actually in the build-up to this game, so even before tonight, and he said, look, of course we'd love to have a Marco van Basten or a Luis Suarez or a Robert Lewandowski at the very peak of their game, but we haven't got one, so we're going to have to look for other solutions. I think he is quite keen on the idea of Ansu Fati as being, I wouldn't necessarily call him a false number nine, but a very mobile number nine, not a static forward. I think he will try again with Rodrigo, as Rodrigo started tonight. I think we'll see Gerard Moreno play as well, but those are both strikers that would rather play, I think, coming in from the side rather than be the out and out number nine. So if you are going to predict what happens between now and next summer's European Championships, I think the most likely prediction right now at least would be that we may well see Ansu Fati as a kind of slightly unorthodox number nine.
From a Portugal perspective, they of course will go into that tournament as defending champions, and there's a big argument to say that they are so much stronger going into this tournament as they were to the one that they won last time out.
Yeah, I think in personnel terms that may well be true. It was curious actually, by the way, tonight watching them and seeing Pepe and Cristiano Ronaldo still there. Now obviously we knew that Cristiano Ronaldo was still there, but the two of them still hanging in there. But I think a year further on for João Félix, Bernardo Silva obviously, who's now a key part of this side and wasn't before. And I think it is possible to see them as a stronger side in terms of man-to-man to what they were in 2016. But in truth, I don't think that makes them amongst the favourites. I still look back at 2016 and think it's a minor miracle that they won the tournament. And so I still don't think that they are one of the teams. If you had to pick out three or four that could win the Euros next summer, even after that improvement in the squad, I still don't think Portugal are one of those three or four.
Meanwhile, Sid, as we've got you here, we may as well talk about Barcelona and their transfer window. These are the players that, of course, came in and out. But I feel like, Sid, I could ask you the same question that I have for the last 12 months, which would be, Barcelona, what a mess.
Yeah. And remember when Lionel Messi, after he decided to stay, did that interview, and one of the things that he said was that for a very long time now, there hasn't been a plan. They've just been juggling things and filling gaps as they go along. As things happen, they respond to them, and there isn't a kind of like a coherent plan. It felt a little bit like that this time around, although I suppose in fairness to Barcelona, the coherent plan was an awareness of the fact that they didn't have any money. And so because they were aware they didn't have any money, they couldn't bring any players in until they moved anyone out. And at least on one level, they were kind of sensible about that. You know, they were in a position where the league wouldn't let them break the salary limits, and so they had to force players out. Now, of course, the problem is that when you're in a position in which everybody knows you're trying to force players out, in which everybody knows you're in financial difficulties, you're not going to get good money for those players. So to give you a rundown, Arturo Vidal, Rafinha, Ivan Rakitic, Todibo, Luis Suarez, all of those went to big European clubs. Barcelona got a grand total of $3.5 million
Wow.
for them. And actually even that figure is false, because of course it cost them money for Luis Suarez to go, because they had to pay off the final year of his contract.
So given that knowledge, why is Ronald Koeman publicly stating how much he wants Memphis Depay when he knows in theory the finances don't back that?
Yeah, it's curious, isn't it? I mean, I think one of them is, at the risk of this sounding like a cop-out of an answer, I think one of them is just personality. That's just the way that Koeman is. He's very direct, he's very blunt, and he's actually, to be fair to him, incredibly honest about it. So he said very clearly, look, I want these players, but I know the financial situation isn't good, and so if others don't go first, I won't get them in. I suspect on top of that, there was probably a desire to, excuse me as my earpiece falls out, there was probably a desire to make sure those players knew that he did want them, to try and maybe put some pressure on the board, to try and put some pressure on players who were refusing to go to try and encourage them to go. So, for example, if you've got someone like Ousmane Dembélé, who is the key to being able to bring people in, why? Because A, you might be able to get a transfer fee for him, or B, as it came towards the end of the window, you think, well, maybe we'll get a loan deal and we'll save around about 9 million euros a year on his salary. Then I guess as a manager, if you're saying to that player repeatedly and publicly, there is someone else I want, perhaps you feel that you've got a better chance of that player finally backing down and saying, yeah, okay, look, I'll go.
Was that the issue with Dembélé? He didn't want to go?
Well, look, I mean, I think he's one of a number of players that didn't want to go. He didn't want to go. Toddy Boll wasn't that keen at first when there was talk of a reasonably big bid from Fulham, and in the end he went on loan to Benfica. There are other players who didn't want to go. Ricky Pooch had been told he wasn't going to play a big part. Carlos Alenia, who had been told he wasn't going to play a big part, didn't want to go. Now, there's all sorts of reasons why players wouldn't want to. One of them, of course, is a very simple one. This board of directors won't be there for very long.
Right.
There's a very good chance that Ronald Koeman won't be there for very long. Why would they ruin their mid-term future based on a short-term need of the club to generate money? And then there's another kind of almost a moral element to this, which is why would the players feel that they should have the responsibility for facilitating the arrival of other footballers at a time when they've already taken pay cuts because of the COVID crisis, and at a time when they're thinking, well, actually, if I hang on, who knows, once that window's closed, perhaps I will end up playing.
Obviously, from a US perspective, a lot of interest in Serginho Dest. He would come on in the second half of that game at the weekend. Overall assessment of his performance?
I mean, to be honest with you, I almost can't give you an answer to that question because, of course, he came on at left back instead of right back. He didn't have a huge amount of time on the pitch. I think there's a certain degree of excitement with him because he's young, because he's quick, because he spoke very well. Incidentally, about Dani Alves and how closely he watched him and how he wanted to be that kind of player, because everybody knows that Ronald Koeman has a huge amount of faith in him. And actually, although it's still early, most people in Barcelona have quite a lot of faith in Koeman as well. Of course, he was the one signing that was able to happen because Semedo left. So I think there's goodwill towards him. I think there's a sense that he could be a good player. But of course, as happens with everything at Barcelona right now, there is also a kind of a sense of, OK, look, let's hang on and let's see what happens. And as I say, at the weekend, out of position, on the pitch for only, what was it, I think 15 or 20 minutes, then I think it's too early to make any real kind of judgment on him.
One player we certainly can make a judgment on, and certainly his coach has, is Antoine Griezmann, who seems to be right back to square one. What I thought was interesting or unnecessary, depending on how you want to describe it, was Koeman coming out and saying, yeah, he should have taken one of those chances. What good does that do in life?
That's a very good question. I mean, look, I take you back almost as if it was a courtroom. I refer you to my previous answer, in which I said that this is partly personality with Koeman.
Yeah, but surely, I understand it's his personality, but you're a coach, you're a man manager. This is your job, isn't it?
Yes.
Going out in the media and saying that a player who surely knew that, you know he's got to take those chances, saying that public doesn't help him
absolutely one
bit.
No, absolutely. And that was precisely how I felt as well. And obviously, I think a lot of people say, well, it's about time these players were told.
Yeah.
It's about time these players who've lived far too comfortably and far too much of an easy life for too long had a manager who was actually a leader who imposed upon them. Now, on one level, by the way, I can buy that argument. I
sure.
really can. On one level, I can say, yeah, you know what? Maybe it is time you had someone said, look, I'm in charge here. I say what I think and tough luck. That said, there's a big difference between us kind of intuitively thinking that maybe there was time for this and how a professional player responds to it. Some players respond very well. Some players certainly don't. And the other thing is that you have to be seen as a manager. And I'm sure all the boys in the studio will tell you this time and time again. I'm sure Stevie Nicol will tell you this time and time again. You have to be seen to be being fair,
yeah.
to being equally, the way you treat people has to be equal. Okay, so... how easy do you think it would be for Ronald Koeman to say that to Leo Messi?
Mm-hmm. Well, imagine if he did. That'd be exciting, wouldn't it? Oh, a bit of drama.
And you're a troublemaker, Daniel.
But it's three games in, you know? It's not like Griezmann's gone on this horrible
yeah.
run. It's three games in. You're supposed to be giving everyone... I didn't get it at all. Meanwhile, Sid, as we got you here, we've got to ask you about Thomas Partey. Arsenal fans, obviously, very excited about the acquisition from Atleti. Should they be?
Yeah, I think so. And you know what? Here's one of the reasons. I think anyone who's watched him play for Atletico Madrid will think he's a very good player. And I think a reason to be excited is that I suspect he might be a better player than the one that we've seen at Atletico Madrid. Because I think at Arsenal he will be released a little bit to play a bit more. That there will be a little bit more freedom. I suspect he will play as the deepest of the midfielders, probably in a three. But I think he'll have the freedom to come up the pitch a little bit more, that he won't just be a defensive midfielder. His statistics, for example, for tackles won and challenges won and positional recovery of the ball and so on, are very, very good. But I actually think what most stands him out is his ability to play two particular types of passes. One, I think, is the incisive sort of 10 or 12 yard pass that just takes the team on to that next stage of the attack. And the other is the diagonal ball to the two fullbacks when they push very wide, or the two wide midfielders. And I think he plays those two passes very well. The other thing he does well, particularly if he's given the freedom to play, is shoot particularly well from 20, 25 yards. And I think in that sense, we've already seen a very good player at Atletico Madrid. I think Arsenal fans are entitled to believe that they may well see an even better player.
Great stuff, Sid. As always, Partey leaving a team that isn't even in the top 10 at the moment. It's been a rough start for Atleti, just one win from their opening three matches. It's Real Madrid who sit top of the table at the moment, still yet to be defeated.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Elsewhere today, we saw big victories for Italy, Denmark and Poland. Croatia, meanwhile, getting a win on the road against Switzerland. Austria defeating Greece by 2-1. Huge matches tomorrow regarding those final places to be filled in Euro 2021, as it's the semi-finals of those four different paths. 8 matches in total, one-off matches, those sides making it through to the final. All these games available on ESPN3, with the exception of Norway against Serbia, which is live on ESPN2. Well, that brings the end of today's show. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you very much to Sid and Craig for being on. More from Frank Shacker and Stevie on Extra Time, which is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Shacker's here, as is Stevie. Frank is having some audio issues and in a bit of a bad mood, so let's try and get through this without getting stroppy. Does Liverpool's recent defeat by Aston Villa put any new doubts in Stevie's mind going into the Merseyside derby? Will the outcome be the same? That, of course, the first match after the international break.
Absolutely. Yeah, listen, regardless of who the next opposition was going to be, I'm questioning the back line. And the fact that it is Everton, the fact that it is Hamas, and the fact that if Liverpool decide to keep playing this ridiculous high line, if there's one man can stick the ball in behind with accuracy, it's Hamas. So, yes, absolutely, it's going on in my head.
Oh, how, what else is going on in your head, Stevie?
Oh, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of stuff you don't want to know. But
with the panel filled with great defenders and a world-class goalkeeper, wow, Shagger, do they think that the height...
I didn't know you played in goals, Dan.
Do they think that the high line of defence that is played at Liverpool, City, Munich is being exploited because the manager and the defence have not had a chance to work together due to a lack of pre-season? What do you think, Shagger?
No, these teams have been playing this way for quite some time. So you feel that nobody's had whole, well, City have had changes in the back, but certainly between Liverpool and Bayern Munich, not wholesale changes. So it shouldn't be as big a problem as it's been so far for those clubs. I mean, the thing is, when you play this high line, you have to get pressure on the ball. You can't play a high line without any kind of pressure on the ball. And I just feel, as a team, that's where those teams are coming unstuck. And I can't explain that, again, given how long they've done it, given the fact that there have been some changes, but not wholesale changes.
Frank, what do you think? A lack of pre-season, is that why we're seeing these top teams not defending as well?
No, I don't think so, because they've been working and they didn't change too much their defense, except maybe one or two players. Now it's just maybe finding between the lines the composure and the understanding. I think if you play with the high line, you have to make sure that the lines before you, the midfielders and the forwards, are working also together, making sure that you are not going too high on the field where the opponent has the time to throw a ball behind you. So it's not only the four defenders and the goalkeeper we can also cover, it's the whole team. We have to work together to make sure that the explanation and the solution will be found.
Xhaka, could Emi Martinez become the quality goalkeeper that Argentina have been lacking to represent the national team for a long time?
Absolutely could be. I like Emi Martinez a whole lot, and he'll be getting more consistent playing time now at Villa. They've started the season really well. I like everything. I like everything that he brings to Argentina's setup right now, because as per the question, yes, between Romero, Willy Caballero, you know, they have had goalkeepers who have been number twos at their respective clubs, and as a result haven't really come in with in the best of form as you would hope. I think they can find that in Martinez.
Frank, if it's true that it was Dembele himself who pulled the plug on the Manchester United move, did he make the right decision to stay and fight for a position in an attack-heavy Barcelona side?
I don't know if it's him who didn't decide to come to Manchester United. I think he has one concern right now, Dembele, is to make sure that he can go back in the right fitness and can play some games. So it's true, you know, going to Barcelona, staying in Barcelona and facing the competition will not be the an easy way for Dembele. Now, that's the problem with Manchester United, and I can't even put Arsenal in it. And it drives me crazy that those two fantastic clubs, where nobody would have refused to come before, show many, many top players. And I'm not only talking about Dembele, because Dembele is not for me a top player, because he doesn't play, because he's injured. But we don't see any top player willing to come to Manchester United and the Gunners. That drives me crazy. So what happened to those clubs? What happened to those boards who didn't buy the right players to make sure that that club will go down at the point that good player, very, very good player, on top of it, don't want to come to those clubs anymore? That's the main problem. Nobody would have refused Manchester United in our time. Nobody would have refused to go to the Gunners as well. That's the main problem and the main concern for the future of Manchester United and Arsenal.
Have any of the guys ever shared a dressing room with a player that they felt was not good enough to be playing for their team? If so, which club were you at and who was the player?
Oh, my God.
You must have all been...
I have one.
Yeah, go on, Frank.
I have one, and I'm sorry. He was playing for Chelsea. He came to Chelsea, did not stay long.
Craig Burley.
And I won't name him because I have too... No. And I have too much respect for professional players, so I don't want to say. But I know that Dennis Suárez was always saying after every training session, did we keep the coupon? Did we keep the coupon to sell him back? But I won't say the name.
Stevie, it must have been very difficult for new players coming into that Liverpool side, given its strength and given the quality and success. You must have been judging straight away and knew if they were good enough or not pretty quickly.
T- To be honest, anybody that was brought in had obviously some ability.
Right.
I think when you go into a club at Liverpool, that, you know, through a 20-year spell, where they're European champions or they're English champions, they're FA Cup champions, it's about being able to go into that dressing room and into that sort of culture and become part of it and feel comfortable. That's as big a problem, walking into a team that are so good, as much as anything else. It's not just about ability, it's about, you know, the mental strength to understand that you are good enough and you do fit in and do all the right things to fit in. So it's not always down to ability, Dan.
Did you see players shrink when they came to Liverpool after doing well at lesser clubs?
Yeah, I saw a couple of players shrink pretty quickly. It's really not nice to see, and it's actually quite obvious because the majority of people there, you know, kind of know they belong and feel as though they belong. And so when you've got a player or two every now and again who clearly just can't fit in, it's actually painful to watch, and everybody would do everything they could to help. You know, it wasn't a case of just somebody getting shunned or anything like that. Everybody would do everything to help, but it became clear pretty quickly, usually, if somebody just wasn't going to be able to fit in.
Shaka?
I can't think of any. Or let me say, the only names that I can think of are young players who were brought in quite clearly just to be squad players.
So does that make it you Shaka, if you can't think of players? You're the only one who didn't notice.
that's probably exactly what it was. But, you know, the question, in all seriousness, the young players are brought in to be squad players, and you knew that they weren't going to be around for long.
Right.
You know, you knew that they weren't going to get into the team, they were going to play in cup competitions and just add some depth to the squad. So, you know, you didn't see them as being, you know, as shrinking as Stevie put it. You just knew that's why they were there, and they'd be gone soon enough. And as soon as they were gone, somebody else would come in and take their place, and they'd be out the door quickly enough too. It was part of the game, especially back then, where transfers kind of were a big part of club's revenue drivers.
Shaka, is a Europa League title enough for Jose Mourinho to have a successful season?
Jose will tell you that. Jose will tell you, given where he took over his team, that they were 14th, that if they win the Europa League, look how far we've come, and this is my biggest accomplishment in club football. Right now I think Spurs are trying to force their way back into that top four. They've made really good signings this summer in doing that. I think they're in a great position to achieve that. If after signing Gareth Bale and Reguilón and all that this season, we are sitting here this time next year and only talking about Spurs as finishing fifth and winning the Europa League, that's not going to be good enough.
Frank, who's more likely to finish in the top four? Manchester United, Tottenham or Arsenal?
Maybe none. If Everton carries on like that, which Manchester City, Liverpool, and I really hope Chelsea, none of them. But I think with what we saw, I don't see Manchester United. If they don't react, if they don't change things, if they don't buy, no, well, they cannot buy any more defenders. It's going to be between Tottenham and Arsenal. Let's say Tottenham. What I saw a couple of last games, I will put them in the top four.
Stevie?
Oh, that's tough. Because there's not that much separates them, to be honest, you know. And we're only four games in, and before a ball was kicked, we pretty much all had Man United either fourth or fifth. And that meant Tottenham and Arsenal probably were on the outside. I mean, it's only four games in. And if you've got to go on present form and how things are looking, I can't see that much change coming very quickly at United, so that knocks them out. Spurs, on the other hand, I mean, we're good in this game. And Arsenal, I guess, I've got a new strength about them. I don't know, Dan. I'm finding it difficult.
Stevie, I have a question, Arsenal. Stevie,
between Arsenal and
Stevie, if you decide to put one of them, Arsenal and Spurs, in the fourth place, who do you put out? Chelsea, Everton?
Right. United. No, United.
No,
that's what I'm saying. If you go on who can take a step forward from here, then it's not United. Because they look as though they're going the wrong way, and you can't see where that next step's coming. Arsenal have just signed Partey, who's a beast in the middle of the park, and who have found a strength that wasn't there before Arteta. And of course, Spurs have made good signings, so they're stronger. So it seems like Man United right now are the team that would be outside of that. And so you'd have to pick from Arsenal and Spurs, and I can't pick one or the other, you know.
Are they better than Chelsea and Everton?
I'll go with Spurs.
Stevie. That's what Frank was asking.
Oh, sorry, no. Not Chelsea. They're not better than Chelsea. Again, right. Everton's too early.
Right.
Everton have been impressive, but it's four games, you know, and that's all it is.
Final point, thoughts on Ukraine being forced to include a 45-year-old retired goalkeeper in their squad after three other keepers tested positive for corona. Xhaka, would you ever come out of retirement if Trinidad and Tobago needed you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm available. Yeah, Xhaka.
I am available. I am ready.
Oh, what a beautiful moment that.
Hey, Dan, only if it was a home game.
Yes. that is it, boys. Thank you very much. Look, Frank's almost smiling by the end of it. Moody's been today. Goodness me. We'll be back tomorrow.
I'm always in a good mood. Always.
Look, that doesn't look like a man who's in a good mood. Angry face, poor smile. That's it. We are done. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.